Hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken-winged bird that cannot fly. Langston Hughes.
I'm so gonna miss y'all.
I know. My brain was just doing that.
How did they do it on The Color Purple? Me and you must never part.
Well, y'all, this is our farewell episode. We have been to the coverage of the Chauvin trial, processing and dealing with community members as we had to face daily coverage and reliving of the murder of our brother Floyd, George Floyd. We have had folks come on and dream. We've had folks come on and just vent. We've had folks talk about what's happening on the front line. We've had folks talk about a whole lot of different things on this weekly community check-in during this season of reckoning. And our time is coming to a close here. The project itself is not, but Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia is coming to a close with this episode. So we want to take a look back at where we've been. We're going to do the Sankofa treatment of this, to look at who we were, to look at who we are, and to look at where we're headed or who we want to be. And so, Miss Georgia, it's been an honor just getting to hold space with you, to cover you in prayer, to see all the things that you're doing as an independent journalist. Sister, it's just been an honor.
Anthony, the feeling is so mutual. It has been such a pleasure to watch your journey, both on the show and spiritually, as you have stepped into a role now as a pastor in Duluth.
You know, it's funny. I've got to share with those who are listening some of the interesting ways that these circles connect. So Georgia, you was in Duluth as a journalist,
yeah,
as a broadcaster. Yeah. You know,
a whole news anchor,
and found yourself having to leave for various reasons, and then to find out, you know, at the annual conference of the African Methodist Episcopal Church that the bishop was sending me to pastor in Duluth. And what's funny is Elder Stacy Smith was one of our early guests, who's my supervising pastor. You know, and it's the presiding elder who, along with, you know, the folks, make the recommendation. So in back of my mind, I'm wondering if she knew when she was talking to us.
Oh, she knew. Already. You know, she knew. Because on top of that, she's prophetic as well.
That's
so, you know, it is amazing to see you also pastor at a church where your grandparents attended as well?
Great grandparents grew up in the church and were members.
Yeah, that's so powerful. I think for me, even you and I having the opportunity to host a weekly show was significant for me because our families have been connected. I've known your aunt for many, many years. She's been a dear friend, and she's been someone who has helped me at every significant moment in my career. And so I was blown away when I found out that we were going to be co-hosting this show together. And it's been nothing short of amazing having these conversations with you in a way that has challenged me intellectually and spiritually, and that has allowed both of us to check in with community and see how they're doing personally and professionally as well.
You know, that check-in piece is so important. When Freddie Bell and Kevin Lindsay and Amper's Radio folks got together and started to dream up the Racial Reckoning Project, I remember us being on the call with all the potential folks who could be a part of it, just kind of hashing out this idea and fleshing it out. And when it came to this weekly check-in, this idea that we would connect with community members to make sure that we archive this moment of racial reckoning and get on the record, you know, the experiences of folks. I was not paying attention to the self effects of being able to weekly know that there's going to be a space where you and I were going to be able to check in, especially during the height of the Chauvin trial. There are two moments that I want to harken back to as you talked about that. As we talk about that particular phase, one of the episodes was called Soul Weary. And it was, I remember the graphic for it is you holding your baby girl. and, you know, covering frontline protests, covering the trial, covering all of those different things. We checked in with you in particular to check in and see how you were doing. And you flipped the script back on me and had a question back on me. And just the night before, I had gotten so angered at the testimony that was happening that I ended up, before I realized it, having stormed out of my house, grabbed my keys, and ended up at George Floyd Square at like 11:30 at night. Just to be in the space and kind of, you know, just process. So there have been times where things with, you know, in this coverage have gotten really weary. And I'm curious for you how you're continuing to use that and reflect on that as you continue to have to be out there covering even now the Potter trial. You know, as I think the prosecution's rested in the defense is going to begin doing their part. And so I'm just curious how, you know, given all of those moments of weariness that we've talked about to date, you know, where are you putting that now? Like, how are you using that now?
You know, Anthony, I am always reminded that I am standing on the shoulders of my ancestors. And while it's important to take a moment, pause, process, reflect, talk through how things affect you, we have to keep moving forward. And so these check-ins for me have been a space where I've been able to come, talk through, share, listen, learn, and then move forward. And so I think, you know, we as a community have had a history, a legacy of being oral storytellers, oral learners. A lot of our history has been passed down orally. And so I feel like this show that we've created has been that place, not just for myself, but I've heard from other people who have been on this show with us, that creating this space to share and process and think through has been very instrumental for people being able to move forward from challenging situations, not just that they're enduring personally, but that we are enduring collectively.
You know, early in the show, we had on Dr. Joy Lewis, who is, you know, you coined our ending phrase with Dr. Joy Lewis, and you know, one of our resident community healers in the space. And it was an amazing conversation because it was during a time when my family had chosen to do some really important self-care. And in that episode, as we saw and got to hear how a practitioner of healing is processing this moment, we got into a conversation where she was like, you know, I didn't cook. She talked about having cooked, and she was talking about, you know, she had cooked for the week, and she had the greens that she learned from her grandmother, and she was just tying these pieces together. And it was a wonderful moment of being able to reflect on the things that we do every day culturally that we may not think to access for our regular healing. I'm curious, you know, being in a space of holding space, like our resident local healer, Dr. Joy Lewis, what are some things that you've picked up in terms of holding space for others throughout our conversations?
I think it's important to listen and allow people the space to be heard. So many times, Black folks are in predominantly white-led spaces where we are not heard, or our voices are minimized, or we are susceptible to code switching and we don't feel like we can show up as our true authentic selves. I think that what you and I have created is a place where our community can show up as their full authentic selves. They don't have to compartmentalize. They don't have to only show up in a limited capacity, but they can show up as their true, whole, full self. And I think that that has been liberating for people.
You're listening to Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia, created and supported by AMPERS, KMOJ Radio, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit racialreckoningmn.org.
I'm curious, Anthony, as we reflect on what has been and where we're headed after this, what have been some of those nuggets that you feel like will stay with you?
So I have three. Everything comes in threes for me. So there's three. The first I'll start off with is the Soulmates episode, where we were trying to figure out, we were stuck, I think, in Tennessee, trying to take the kids in the outdoor experience in the lockdown, trying to keep them some sense of sanity. We were trying to nail down Cerezo, yo boo thing, just so we could have the two couples on there. And we ended up like being in three different places, having to record on the road. But even in that, you know, one of the nuggets that took away is to see another couple have to process going through this moment together. Yeah. And how we show up for one another. That was huge. I got to see some friends, right, be in a similar spot. And so y'all will always be in our heart in that regard, because I think for us, it started a very different conversation in our household, just about how we show up for one another. And so that was a big deal for me, right? To go to the remembrance that not only you're not alone about in this, as much as you're going through what you're going through, you've got a partner who's also experiencing things. And how do we have that conversation? So that stood out to me. The second one that stood out to me was our conversation with Tish Jones.
Yes.
Soul Collective episode. I don't know what it was about that episode, but it was, we had a conversation. Like it was, I think all of us might, I know for me, I said some things that usually I would kind of couch and couth and all those types of things. And there was something about that space that we just got to talk as it was. Like we and that stood with me, because how often in this season have we, and especially in our current environment, do we try our hardest to couch things so much because you're concerned about how it comes out and all those things. And how often do we get to just have a frank and honest conversation that gets at the heart of some of the important things? I think I walked away from that one going, man, that's the energy I want to be in. And that energy has proven well. I think that energy, you know, allowed me to preach some sermons that helped, you know, push things over the edge in terms of my appointment. So that was huge. The third one goes all the way back to when you brought on the mothers. You brought on Rose McGee.
Yeah.
And
Kimberly Handy Jones.
And Kimberly Handy Jones. And hearing this mother who organizes other mothers who have lost people, that was huge. That was huge. It was real. It was raw. And it gave an insight to the wraparound effects of these moments beyond just the policy, beyond just the reactions that folks have to it. It got us face to face with one of our healers, right? I got to watch Miss Rose McGee, one of our community healers, and Miss Handy Jones talk to each other and get to share in that space. It was like church, to be able to have the elders on the line handling business. And I almost felt imposter level, sitting at there, like, why do I even be here? I was like, our producer, Clee, you could just have them keep talking. And I'm just going to sit back and, you know, maybe I'll hold a light or a boom or something like that. Those are three things that will always stand for me from this, from these episodes. I'm curious which ones stand out for you.
Oh, Tish Jones, for sure. she dropped the mic. Louis Blaze, that was another one of my favorite episodes. He did a performative piece for us that just felt so timely, yet timeless. And it moved me.
Speaking out is a roll call, calling our people out of the darkness and bringing them into the light. Telling them to embrace themselves, embrace their greatness. Finally come up out of the darkness, embrace your greatness. The revolution will be televised this time around, and it's our obligation to stand up and fight for our rights, to fight for our freedom, to fight for our people, and to speak for those who cannot speak for themselves.
And I would also say there was a bit from what Kevin Lindsay said in terms of contextualizing where we are today, the mic drop. I think that's a nugget that will stay with me as well.
That's the one where he said he talked about the third Reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Man.
Yes.
We can't underscore the point that we're almost in the third period of reconstruction within our country. This third cycle of reconstruction, for me, I look at it after slavery, I look at the civil rights, and I look after our first Black president. Those time periods, America had to really struggle with what it means to be an American.
Wow.
And I think within this space, I'm at least encouraged, you know, the first two instances, the steps weren't as big, but I'm hoping that it'll be a quantum leap here after the desert that we have been in and the wilderness that we have been in for the last 5-6 years. Hopefully we will be in a better place.
That the history buff in the history nerd in me just like melted. Like he could have had everything in my household if he would have asked for it in that moment.
Yep, those are my three.
You're listening to Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia, created and supported by Ampers, KMOJ Radio, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit racialreckoningmn.org. So she's going to hate me for this, but all this time we have had somebody in our court producing us, keeping us real close, you know, organizing folks to come in, holding it down late nights, producing and editing all of our crazy schedules around. And so I would be remiss in our final episode if we didn't get to hear a little bit of the same questions from our producer, Hlee Lee Cron, who is a journalist, a producer. She's with me on the Counter Stories podcast. But Hlee, I am so curious, you know, what are some nuggets for you throughout this time together, being that you get to listen to every single piece of audio?
Also, let me just say, if we could insert applause here.
Yes. She types in the chat. Nope.
Because, I mean, I've just been, you know, I've been learning from the two of you how you guys are keeping it together. I feel like I'm not very good at keeping it together, and just seeing the way that you both do it with grace and the hopefulness that you bring to it, and your love for your babies and your families, I think that is very inspirational to me, and just the insight that I'm able to sit in on. You know, these are conversations that, you know, I don't get to have, and I've met so many people through this process. Rose McGee made me a sweet potato pie, and I brought it to my mom, and we had it with my niece. And so we had three generation of women eating this beautiful pie. And you know, it was so heartwarming. I really felt really connected to the community in a new way, feeling the love coming from these folks that, you know, we're doing this all over Zoom. So feeling the love from all these folks that I've not met in person yet.
Beautiful. And
I apologize, Hlee. I know you hate that. But I had to get your voice in the mix, because none of this would be possible without you holding it down the way you were and showing me some of the ropes technical side. We were able to trade off a couple of producing gigs. And so I'm saying this with heartfelt sincerity, having to been on the other side to pull a show or two together. I can't do what you do on a weekly basis. And absolutely. So I just needed folks to be able to hear some of the support and the fact that this is multiracial support, right? So when you want to talk about the myth of this rift between Asian and Black community spaces that I think it's overhyped. I mean, this is an example of some of that. You understand some of the nuances that other folks would never understand. And so hearing you even edit the shows, I can see your understanding of the experience of Black community spaces and of us personally. And I just need to name that and how important and awesome that is. Well, I ain't gonna make that promise. So, you know, I've been waiting for this question for a while, and so I'm gonna ask it just flat out. So we have been to some places in the daily coverage. You know, I was there in George Floyd Square when the verdict was announced. Time Magazine took a bunch of our pain and made it a front page thing, or not Time Magazine, but one of the newspapers. Because I was standing there with Gia Starr Brown, who I was hoping would be a guest at some point. She's another clergy pastor, one of my big sisters in the ministry. Her partner, myself, and several other clergy, you know, were watching the video camera as it was streamed, and we were watching your feed, Georgia, during that time. And there was just this moment of full circle that we had independent journalists who were responsible for us getting the information real time. And we were in turn acting upon that information. And then to see all of these other mainstream news organizations taking that moment and needing to follow into that moment as independent journalists and as journalists yourself, both of you, I know. But Georgia, I'm curious, you know, you have seen a lot. You were live streaming and doing an interview. Or, no, I don't know if you're live streaming, but you were doing an interview when a drive-by happened. I watched on the live stream as you had to dodge rubber bullets and things that are being thrown at a Brooklyn Center. I mean, you have literally been on the ground. If you had to do it all over again, what would you add, change? You know, having the benefit of hindsight being 2020, what are some things that you were like, oh, I would have gone back. Oh, I would have could have done this or things like that. I'm always just curious.
If I could go back, I would have become independent sooner.
Now, tell me more about that.
Well, when George Floyd was murdered, I was working for a new media company that I thought was going to do the things that I knew were necessary to advance the narrative around or advance the narrative for Black culture. And the murder of George Floyd and that company's coverage surrounding it revealed it was going to do the exact opposite. And so that's how I became independent fully. I had already been doing some work independently in the evenings and on the weekends outside of that position. But because I wasn't independent at that moment, I feel like I held back in some ways. I wasn't really on the front lines. And to be honest, you know, I mean, everything happens for a reason. If I was fully independent, I don't know if I would have felt comfortable being out there, you know, with three children. At that time, my youngest was only, I think, one and a half. And I had friends, I had other journalists who had gotten arrested after George Floyd was murdered. You had a journalist who was shot in the eye and lost the eye.
Yeah.
A lot of equipment broken, you know, but I was kind of, you know, hard on myself during that time because, I mean, I was doing a lot, but it didn't feel like enough. And I know I'm not the only person who feels that way. I've talked to other people who feel like I wish I could have done more, you know, feeling guilty about only coming to clean and not, you know. And so I don't know. There's just a part of me that feels like I wish I would have started on this trajectory sooner because I feel like my work has been impactful, you know. And I think about that original press release that came out, and It just didn't feel like there was any accountability to the media perpetuating that narrative. And in a lot of ways, now I feel like I've assumed that role to at least say something when these things are happening and inaccurate narratives, harmful narratives are being perpetuated. But at that time, I just wasn't in that position to do that work. So that's the only thing. I just, you know, I know a lot of people might think that maybe I wouldn't be as involved, but I feel like if I could go back, I'd be even more involved.
Let me give a heartfelt thank you to Kevin Lindsay of the Minnesota Humanities Center, Freddie Bell at KMOJ, who kind of birthed this idea and brought this up. Freddie Bell has been very clear from the get-go, and just his way of just being real smooth and cool throughout all the things. You know, you always get a sense that everything's going to be all right just in his presence. All of the reporters who worked in here, from all the young reporters of color who have been holding it down for the daily updates and will continue to do so, beyond bearing witness to you, Georgia, of course, Marianne Combs. Yep, absolutely. Yes. Who's helping support and kind of give that journalistic mentorship through folks. Aaron over at Ampers.
Joel,
all those folks. Justice backing us up. There's so many people who go into making this. And I want to make sure that folks understand that this is a communal effort. And this was a communal effort that was multiracial and that was inclusive of white folks in the overall scope, who were saying, how can I do my part and how can I take the lead from folks of color and support in that way? For those who think that it cannot happen, it absolutely has. And we are an example of some of that. To Hlee, our absolute wonderful producer in chief, who stays in the chat, keeping us on task, helping us to push when we need to be pushed and helping us to keep remember things when we need to remember it. But also who spends that tireless energy making this sound the way it does when it comes out into the podcast space. You need to honor your producers. The scripture says, honor thy mother and thy father, and thy days will be long. In the tech space, when you're doing this media content, you honor your producers and your editors, or you will not be successful. Understand? Okay. There's just so much that goes. And then all of the guests who gave time and community and space to be able to let us be able to check in. We're going to be able to go back and see what some of the folks on the ground were experiencing during this moment of reckoning. And who knows, maybe there is a call that comes out to say, hey, we need this space again. And when we have that opportunity and we get that call, you best believe that Anthony and Georgia are going to be here at the ready to hold space again and ultimately to make sure we keep this one thing in front of us. So, Ms. Georgia, I kick it over to you.
In the words of Dr. Joy Lewis, may the revolution be healing.
This is Bearing Witness.
Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia is a production of Racial Reckoning, The Arc of Justice, a journalism project created and supported by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, in partnership with KMLJ Radio, the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.